Making that YouTube money is a saying that we might very well be comfortable with in 2020. However, it's only been a short period of time where it's been common knowledge that you can indeed earn a living off of YouTube. YouTube launched its partner program way back in 2009 with a handful of creators and a handful of advertisers. Since that time, revenue has grown to over $15 billion in 2019, and I think it's fair to say that most people now know that making a living off of YouTube is something that is a reality for an entire generation. But the question is, how much does it actually take to make a living off of YouTube, and what does making a living off of YouTube actually mean in raw dollars and cents? So to talk about that, allow me to introduce the co-host of Chad and Steve Have a Podcast, the incomparable Steve Ramsey.
Hey, Chad, it's good to talk to you. I think one of the important things that people need to keep in mind is creators making a lot of money on YouTube. A lot of money on YouTube are the exception to the rule. And I think it's also important to note that when you read figures about YouTube and how people are making money, it's like, what exactly are they talking about? Is it just ad revenue from AdSense, or is it a lot of other factors that go into it? For instance, I read this article today that said 97% of YouTubers aren't making more than the US poverty line per year, which is about $12,000. So on one hand, I can believe that 97% of YouTubers aren't making much money. That makes sense. But it also begs the question, what exactly does that mean? YouTubers aren't making more. Does it mean more on just AdSense, or does it just mean they aren't making more because they're not monetizing other things? It's a little bit unclear. And I think that the kind of mainstream media always is a little bit confused about how YouTubers earn a living.
And while going through and doing research for this particular podcast, I think both of our eyes were opened to the amount of mainstream media outlets which will write articles seemingly knowing what the what is about making a living off of YouTube, and literally do their research seemingly on like Social Blade, just using averages of like $3 to $5 CPMs and just generalizations which in no way would give any perspective to whether or not it is actually realistic to think that you would be able to make enough money making videos on this platform, because it depends on what kind of videos you're making and how long you've been making videos and the types of advertisers, the types of audience that you have. So there's a whole bunch of things which need to be taken into consideration when having this conversation, and that kind of gets glossed over because it's way more interesting to have a fun clickbaity headline, isn't it?
Boy, there's a lot of those. I mean, even, and you know, big organizations like Forbes. I mean, Forbes is a financial kind of publication, and you would think that they would have a little bit more detail. And yet, then when you see the author says things like, I didn't even know this was possible for, and it's like, well, this article was written in 2018 or something. How, wait, this is brand new to you that YouTube is actually a thing. It's very odd.
11 years the partner program has been around. So it's not this fringe group of people anymore. And YouTube is literally the second largest YouTube or website on the planet. So there's no more aw shuckness to it, is there?
No.
And it really seems that writers and journalists seem to stay and dwell in that space of like, oh my goodness, isn't it amazing that you can...
They probably still think that it's people making cat videos or you know, just somehow they just hit upon the golden ticket somehow, you know.
And that's one of the things that isn't brought up, that as you start earning more money, the demands production-wise and all of the rest raise as well. So your expenses are going through the roof. So it's a lot more expensive to start producing the content, which starts generating you more money, as it were. And while we were doing this, we went through and we were doing a deep dive into our revenue streams. And we realized, or at least I realized, that if it came down to just the ad revenue, and we do incredibly well on the Clean My Space channel, as far as just ad revenue is concerned, because we're in an area which has a really, really high CPM and somewhat low competition. But if we were reliant upon the money that we've made off of that over the past however many years, we probably wouldn't be in the position that we are. We wouldn't have a team. We wouldn't be able to produce the same quality that we have with the same kind of equipment and whatnot. So that's kind of the rub. The more you start making, the more it kind of costs to keep this train rolling.
Yeah. And if there's a couple of things that, first of all, I guess the question that we'll have to get into is whether it's even possible for like a solo creator to earn a living on YouTube anymore with the demands of production values kind of raising the bar for everyone. And I think we've talked about this before, but I think it would be kind of difficult to just kind of start in haphazardly the way I did, you know, 12 years ago. I think that those days are over. I also think that it will be important for us, before we get into this, for anybody listening to this, to kind of understand how the YouTube AdSense partner program works and what kind of these terms mean that we throw out, like CPM and RPM. And so do you want to give that in a nutshell, how AdSense works?
Let me try my best.
Okay.
So we all know that there's ads which play before and during and after videos. There's also ads which appear on the page, display ads.
The static ads, yeah.
The static ads, if you will. The ads which are played, the pre-roll ads and the mid-roll ads and the post-roll ads, those are the ones that we're all just kind of used to at this point. And there's the skip button, which happens after 5 seconds. And there's a differing amount of money which is paid whether or not someone watches an entire ad or if someone skips it. The amount of money that you are paid is also relative to whether you have an audience which tends to skip ads, like a younger audience or a more savvy audience, versus an audience which may allow ads to be played, so therefore you can get higher income off of them, thus supporting the creator.
So the advertisers, what they do is they're willing to pay a certain amount for a very targeted demographic. And so I think kind of the more targeted those ads can be, the more that they're willing to pay in a lot of cases. And what that comes down to is this idea of CPM, which is cost per mil. And don't confuse that with million. It's the Latin mil, like in millimeter, which is 1,000. So it's cost per 1,000 clicks, basically, because this is another kind of confusing thing a lot of people have. They think that YouTubers get paid by the amount of views or by the amount of people who watch those ads. And I'm pretty sure that you have to interact with that ad. You need to click on the ad for that to count as ad revenue. And then on top of all of that, and I hope you correct me on some of this when I'm done adding to, because it's pretty confusing really. And on top of that, what happens is YouTube has a 55% split. Is that how it works? They get 55%, or the creator gets 55% of that share?
It's changed quite a bit, I think, over the years, but I believe now the majority goes to the creator and they do take less. So I think it's a 55-40, but it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Or it could also be different based upon different scales of YouTuber. We are very much in a position where there's different categories of YouTubers and content creators, and they have different kind of funnels of advertisers. The advertisers have the ability to advertise specifically a channel specific or pillar or industry specific, if that makes sense. If you just want to be on cleaning and organizing channels, if you right. just want to be on woodworking channels, or if you just wanted to be on woodworking for Mere Mortals and Frank Howarth, and like just select some particular people within that, you can drill down that fine. So it's great for advertisers love it, because it's a wonderful way to get really, really, really targeted eyes. And obviously creators love this because they have ads which are relevant to the people that are watching them, which is always fantastic. And it allows them to host their video and post it and share it and possibly get a viral video without actually needing to, as we learned from Matthias's episode, where you have to pay for the bandwidth of your own videos.
Right.
So that, in kind of a nutshell, is how the partner program kind of works. You have content creators on one side creating the content, you have advertisers on the other side. However, there's a million different levels of how much people are willing to pay. And you talked about getting into this at a time where we got on the platform when there were no partner programs, really. So therefore, it was just for the sake of putting out content, and you weren't thinking about gearing your content towards making it be something which could be in a lucrative space, a space with high CPMs. We accidentally fell into that space because we are in the cleaning space. Cleaning has companies which are multi-billion dollar companies like Procter & Gamble and Arm & Hammer and OxiClean and all of these other large companies. And there's an incredibly small, or at least there was a few years ago, a small pool of creators who were creating that type of content. So we really we managed to generate a good amount of money off of a smaller amount of views. Further to your, it's literally the amount of views that gets you mm-hmm. good amounts of money. It's actually how high your CPM is, or how niche your industry is, right, and how much advertisers are willing to pay for what's called niche advertising, or basically paying more to get less eyes, but you end up getting much more targeted eyes. So you have people who are creating content in a space which is very comfortable for them, be it crafting or be it cleaning or be it woodworking. And they find themselves being slotted into an advertising kind of like structure, which has their industry on like a priority list, or like there's a hierarchy to everything. Sure. So if you're doing law advice, let's say you're a lawyer and you have one of those like, oh, I do commentary on law cases. Law right now is incredibly high. I'm sure the CPMs, I think, are like $40, $50, because the value of a law client to a lawyer is really, 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 really high. I learned this when we were making websites and we came across a residential elevator company who would pay ridiculous amounts of money for leads, simply because someone who wanted to install an elevator in their house probably had a whole bunch of money. So that person was worth quite a bit of money to them.
I thought it'd be fun if we just kind of gave some numbers here, just as a comparison of, for instance, my own channel, Woodworking for Mere Mortals, and what kind of CPM that is, which is around $17.
Which is really good.
Which is good. And that's because, again, this is a real targeted audience, and it's real easy for advertisers to say, I want this age, this demographic. It's mostly going to be male. It's mostly going to be this age. It's mostly going to, obviously, people who are interested in fixing things, DIY. There's a whole list of things you can go to. And I know, because I've been an advertiser myself, and it's kind of interesting to, you know, pick all of those. Now compare that with, now this is brand new, our channel, our Chad and Steve have a podcast YouTube channel, which is kind of supplementing this podcast. And
subscribe to Chad and Steve have a YouTube channel.
That's right. We just changed the name of it. We're going to start changing the content on the YouTube channel to provide more video specific content for that, as opposed to the audio podcast. So when you, and we just qualified for the partner program this month, because there's a criteria. When you start a YouTube channel, you have to have 1,000 subscribers, and you have to have 4,000 hours of views per
watch time. Watch out, 4,000 hours. And that's the rub. 1,000 subscribers, not too bad. Getting 1,000 subscribers to watch 4,000 hours.
Well, we have Matthias Wandel to thank for that, really, because it was all based on one. And that was just because they knew me, they knew Matthias. And so that was kind of a good way for us to break into that. So we've been earning the AdSense revenue over there. And right now we're getting a little over $9 CPM on that channel. And again, don't confuse that with, like, when it says cost per mil, cost per thousand. It's not every 1,000 views of a video you get paid $9. It doesn't work that way. It's per ad clicks. I'm pretty sure they have to click on
for the ad. Duration of the ad, or the amount of engagement with the ad. They know if you're watching an ad and you don't have the tab active. They know, I mean, there's a lot of things that they actually know without needing a raw click,
right?
But at the same time, a lot of this now is kept tight-lipped.
It is clearly, you really don't know.
We've come from a time where everybody used to try to game everything. Google is the kings of understanding that everybody is literally out to just figure out a way to take advantage of them. And so they have to be somewhat tight-lipped with some things.
And for those who are curious, one thing is that Google, part of the terms of service is we can't discuss the actual dollar amounts that we earn. It's like a violation of the, I don't know, of the terms of services. But, you know, I can say that for a month, we've made between, we'll say $20 and $25. Somewhere in that range.
It could be as low as 20. It could be as high as 25.
Somewhere in there.
Somewhere in between.
So, and that's okay. So this is a channel with, I don't know, we've got like 1900 subscribers and however many views that we've had on that little channel. But the subscriber number isn't that important. And I know I keep like always stressing that because people, even these articles you read about how much YouTubers can make, they always base it on number of subscribers. And that's just like, it's more of a interesting metric that sort of applies to it, but not really, because there's channels that have low, under 100,000 subscribers who make really good money. It just depends. There's a lot of other factors.
And there's a lot of other things aside from ad revs. So maybe we should actually rewind just a little bit and let's talk about a few of the ways that a creator can make money above and beyond AdSense. Let's just say we've all established, we know exactly what AdSense is.
Okay.
You make some money by putting some commercials on your content. That's part of the puzzle. As I said earlier, if it came down to us trying to run Clean My Space and the team and do what we do over here off of just the money that we made off of ad rev, it just wouldn't happen.
No.
There would be far too many expenses and all of the money that we make would just go towards that. So what are some of the other things that YouTubers do? Well, it's no secret that a lot of people use affiliate links, especially now with Amazon being as large as it is. We've been doing affiliate links since a good long while. I think right shortly after Amazon came up with their affiliate program. And I come from a history of making websites. So I'm very used to commission junction and setting up websites, which are keyword specific and, you know, da, 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 and getting affiliate through your traffic. It's a much smaller number, a much, much smaller number. However, it's something very organic that can be incorporated into your content or incorporated into kind of what you're doing. That if you're doing a haul on your, you know, your Christmas, your Christmas stocking stuffers, that you would be able to link to all of the products that you feature in your video, and people can go on Amazon, a cookie gets placed on their browser. And then if they go and buy that product, or the best part is if they buy anything else from Amazon over the next 60 days or it's 30 days or however long that cookie sits in there on their computer, on their cell phone, everything that they purchase, you get a little percentage of. It's not big. They go and buy a Dyson vacuum for $700 and you only get $8, but it was $8 that wasn't there before when you were literally still talking about a Dyson vacuum cleaner perhaps in your content.
Though affiliate sales are great. It is kind of a great way to always, and if you ever just kind of want to boost your numbers for a month, you just start mentioning some products and putting links to them, and it definitely helps. I know last year I did a Christmas, I don't normally like doing these Christmas gift buying guides too much for woodworking, because who's going to see them? Woodworkers, I guess, they're going to buy them for themselves or something, you know, or show the video to somebody else. But I just did a stocking stuffer one. I thought really useful things that are small and inexpensive that you can get. And just doing that video, the affiliate sales just were double what I normally get just that month, just by having that one video out there. And this was people buying, you know, referred to Amazon from small products like a tape measure that I was recommending and these kind of things. So it doesn't even have to be big ticket items. It's like you say, once they get over to Amazon, because I can look through, you can look through your sales on Amazon. If you ever look through that list and see, you know, I'll see like, I don't know, shampoo and stuff.
Kitty litter, everything, there. Books.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. I'm earning commission off of stuff like that, you know, that I didn't even plan on. And then, like you said, I also have the commission on other sources, Home Depot. You know, I've got commission sales on there, Microjig, and
various. Is it done the same way as Amazon? I haven't worked with Home Depot in that way.
Home Depot does the commission junction thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so they have a whole program set for, I mean, of course, it's Walmart has one as well. So
anybody can set up one of those. Yeah.
The best part is we're making videos over here. So versus Twitter or Facebook or any other social platform, which has a bit of a shelf life to it. And then kind of once the initial push of your Amazon, you know, 50 great products you can buy on Amazon for under 10 bucks. As soon as that initial kind of push goes through on most social platforms, you're not going to get that reoccurring revenue. Right. One of the things that we love is our videos from 2016, 2017, 2015, which still get really, really good views, still have that messaging in there, and it's still as fresh as ever. If you go through into the description, click that link, even though that video was made in 2016, that still places a cookie today on that person's system. So therefore, anything they purchase off of Amazon kind of moving forward until another cookie kind of replaces that, as it were, you're going to get affiliate revenue on. And as much as we don't actively do anything about it, because we've been doing affiliate revenue for so long, even without actively managing it, we still do well into four figures from Amazon every single month. It's a little check that arrives in the mail, and it's magical because it is such a passive way to kind of add
it is
to the pot.
I'd like to throw into this Patreon. A lot of creators use Patreon as a way of helping to fund their channel and what they're doing. And Patreon can be very lucrative depending on how much effort you're willing to put into it and really work it and provide content specific to it.
Now, we've never gone the Patreon route. We've mm-hmm. done Kickstarter, so we can talk about that shortly. But I would love to find out your experience with Patreon. Like what kind of pushed you over? When did you move over to it? And what does that look like now for you?
I started it actually on a separate platform called Subbable. Now, this was a thing developed by Hank Green, you know, from the Vlog Brothers and VidCon. And so he developed this platform called Subbable, almost identical timing with Patreon. And for whatever reason, Hank Green invited me to be on Subbable as part of its launch. And I was like, well, hell yeah, I'll give this a shot. I was kind of like flattered that he would invite me and CGP Grey and Weezy Waiter and some of these people all together on this. But they had problems with it, and they just couldn't get it to expand, even though it was a good thing. And so eventually they sold it to Patreon. And then that's when I became a member of Patreon over there. And I mean, it's a great community building thing. I see it more, the way I use it is more of a, I guess like a fan. People like to support the channel, so they do it because I don't work it, I guess, the way you could if you really wanted to make a lot of money on there and, you know, have content specific things, live streams that only Patreon members can get and that thing. So for me, I was figuring out my percentages here of income this morning, and Patreon amounts to 1% of my income.
Yeah, I was going to jump in and say that I think the thing that resonates most with Patreon is it's such a direct way to show support for a creator. And I know a lot of people like getting their name in the credits or getting some kind of acknowledgement or just something else, a coaster that says that they're part of the, you know, like the crew that's helped support a creator. And we took a call with the people at Patreon, and we were very close to wanting to do it. However, we never followed through with it for one reason or another. But I remember the person at Patreon saying, remember that the people who use Patreon, they're here because they want to support you. You could give them a paperclip in return. They're here to use this platform as something off of YouTube. I think people like the fact that it was off of YouTube. It seems more like if YouTube were to snatch this person's channel away, I would still be able to directly kind of support them through this. So I think that, and didn't YouTube do a tip jar for a while? Is YouTube still doing
that? I forgot about
that.
We should have added that on our features, because they got rid of the tip jar. They used to have what they do now is the memberships, which is similar to, they're trying to take that Patreon. From people that use memberships, they seem to like it a lot better than Patreon, because it's all right there on YouTube. It's all, you don't have to leave the site. And I think there's a lot of other features on there that seem appealing. I don't use the memberships, but it seems popular.
So got a kind of a walkthrough with our Google rep about what it looks like. It's pretty impressive. And I think one of the things that they offered, which was very unique, was badges.
You're right.
So therefore, when someone's commenting on YouTube in the comment section, they can kind of show their affiliation or their fandom, if you will, for the creator by like being a, you know, preferred or a highlighted comment or have a badge associated with that. And I think people really dig that. Another thing that YouTube has just started doing and we are doing now is the ability to put products, your merch directly right into like the description. So on the YouTube page, you see little pictures of people's shirts or in our case, the cloths and whatnot. And there's another, I mean, that is a separate point that we're going to be talking about in a minute where it's like talking about merch and all of the rest. But that is another feature that YouTube has right now to help creators out.
And that's another stream of income that a lot of YouTubers do really well at is not their own products, but just that line of merch that is branded products that some of the larger channels do really well on it. And some of them even expanded into their own line of stuff like H3 with their Teddy Fresh fashion.
I mean,
line.
A standalone fashion brand. Now.
Right.
Yeah. All coming from this. So. Or if, you know, obviously you're starting out smaller, there's places like Cafe Press and other places, which I probably wouldn't remember the name of, which will do all the printing and shipping and drop shipping for you. So therefore you can kind of,
What I use. I think it's Teespring is the one that's incorporated in with YouTube. So it just, the t-shirts are available. And again, that amount is such a small number for me. It's just not even a blip, really. That's just a kind of a goodwill gesture, really. Here's a shirt if you want it. I'm not really making anything off of these.
And you did that very early. I mean, it was almost kind of like the thing very early on was it wasn't merch for the sake of making a bunch of money. It was merch for being like, hey, I'm on YouTube. Fun. And it was kind of like a tribal thing where it was like, hey, you. So hopefully you would wear the shirt in a store and someone would be like, hey, you watch. It doesn't even matter if it was, you know, someone listening or watching your channel, just like a YouTube shirt. It was like, hey, that's kind of cool. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. The big,
I know what you, I was just going to say.
Massive elephant in the room.
I know what
everybody wants to ask about. The biggest way that apparently you can make money as a creator, and I specifically wanted to kind of leave it for this point because I have a few things to say about it, but I know you do too. So let's talk about brand deals. Let's talk about sponsored content.
That is so funny that you brought that up because I was just thinking, okay, I know the next thing. I can't believe we haven't mentioned it. Everybody listening to this podcast is going, what about the sponsored deals?
When did you do your first sponsored deal? Like, when did you do your first hashtag? This is an ad and I got a good sized paycheck for doing this.
Well, it depends upon if you're talking about the thoroughly integrated brand deals where the video itself was completely sponsored or just those 60 second shout out ads. And that was the first one I did was the first real kind of sponsored deal I had was with Audible, and that would have been back in maybe 2014, maybe, I think somewhere around in there. And it was pretty good and it was fun doing those things. But, you know, I've told this story many times. I was doing a lot of those sponsored deals on the channel and it was just kind of, it was becoming more of a liability on my channel than an asset.
And it starts to eat away at your creativity. We have been, we've been working with sponsors at Clean My Space for, since I think our first one, we were fortunate enough to get this company called Procter & Gamble come with a bag full of money in 2014. So a lot happened in between 2013 and 2014 for Clean My Space. It was in and around the time that YouTube was having a huge surge in popularity. This was the first really massive surge. It's called the golden age of YouTube. And a lot of people were like, it's where you would drive through like New York and you would see billboards of Michelle Phan or Lily Singh or Philip DeFranco or PewDiePie or whatnot. So we were a little channel. We had maybe like 40 or 50,000 subscribers. But again, like I mentioned, we were the only people doing what we were doing on the platform. So we were pretty much, if you were Procter & Gamble, you kind of had to go to us because no one else was really going to organically get your dish detergent the exposure that it needs. We had done like smaller little deals. Hey, give us $500 and send us one of your steamers and we'll put a little video together. But this was early on, none of this had any kind of like real impact on like, oh, this is what we should do. This really could make us a bunch of money. But Procter & Gamble came by and they're like, we want to do 4 videos with you. They're all going to be about our detergent. And we're going to send people over. So they sent some agency people over with clipboards from New York, and they sat, and here we are in our house putting together our little cleaning videos. And everything went well and good, and the videos ended up doing very well, and we made an enormous amount of money. In the interest of keeping things whatever, it was an incredibly large amount of money for a channel which had 50,000 subscribers, as it were. However, during that time, that's when we really started realizing, because we had these people from New York with their clipboards, and they would watch and listen to every single word. And what the videos started out being to what they ended up being produced as, and we weren't ashamed of them, we weren't embarrassed, but they were way more over the top and kind of like
sales
pitch, heavy-handed. Yeah, very, very heavy-handed. And we thought it was fine. We excused it because we were making some money. Everybody was very happy that we were doing a sponsored deal, so the audience was even on board. So it was a wonderful experience. So we started doing kind of more and more of those, because that allowed us to be like, hey, look, we can work with Procter & Gamble, we can work with your cleaning product or your whatever. So we ended up doing kind of a slew of sponsored deals. And that's when people really started to perk up and take notice. And I think this is an issue which is rampant now, especially on Instagram and whatnot, with influencers who literally move from sponsored thing to sponsored thing to sponsored thing without having time to breathe, without thinking about your content in the form of a big calendar, and thinking that if you're going to put a sponsored deal here, you know, air it out with some stuff that some people want, or something like, and finding that mix and that balance was something that we didn't know out of the gate. And a brand will push you until you either, you know, stand up and really, really do a hard, like, no, I can't do this. Ultimately, it's a great way to make a bunch of money, but it really, really, really does cut into your creative mindset.
And it cuts into your audience, really. It kind of, because your audience is now your product. What you're doing is all of those eyeballs, you're just selling to an advertiser, really, is what you're doing. So your relationship with your audience changes when now you're just looking at them mostly as potential viewers of a product that you're trying to sell, rather than viewers of your actual content that you're trying to make.
So we grew to a point where in 2016, we started selling our own products. We started selling our own cloths and things like that. A, that became much more lucrative because, and it was consistent. And that's the thing that a lot of people, and maybe we're in a space where we've been doing evergreen content for so long that we literally look at content quite differently than maybe a lot of other people do, where it's just kind of like you make something and you move on from it. You realize how your content ends up being your portfolio, and that comes around with you. And when that content is full of commercials, you look like you're full of commercials. You're the type of person that's just making content to, you know, do commercials. And we got to the point in 2014 where we realized that we could make an enormous amount of money being those people, just moving from sponsored deal to sponsored deal, put the earplugs in when people start complaining and just blinders on and just keep marching forward. Don't worry about those people because we're making a whole bunch of money and it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. However, it did. It did, because it kept just scratching away at me every single time we did it. Every single time they were like, could you not say this and say this instead? It was just like another little kind of penny on the pile, as it were. And then sooner or later, you get to the point where it's like, I can make way more money just talking about my product. My Right. audience is very much used to wanting to support this product because, you know, I did a lot more than just slap my name on something. I've really put a lot of work into this. And finally, I can stop saying something just because I'm being paid to say it. And that's what you can't get away from, everyone. That's what you can't get away from in a brand deal. People know that what you're out there saying, you're being paid for. So it doesn't matter if you like the product. You only like the product because you're getting paid for it.
And that's the thing, is that you'll hear a lot of creators say, well, I just want to let you know that I won't do these brand sponsored deals unless I really believe in the product. Well, it's like, Of course you believe in it. You're getting paid to believe in it. It's not that hard of a stretch to say you like something, and you actually probably do like it. Most products that you do are fine products. It's nothing, you know, it's nothing that's going to be detrimental to somebody's health or something for the most part. So you're pretty much safe in saying that. And I think that what's happening lately, and I see this on some of the maker slash woodworking channels, is that the entire video is becoming just an ad. And it's not just an ad. It'll be like every time they pull out a tool, they're mentioning the brand and an affiliate link, and go, there's a down in the description. Make sure you click on the links for these. And then they'll get into the 60-second spot for Squarespace or whatever. And it's like, oh my God, it's pretty obvious what's going on here, that the actual thing, the video that you're making, is kind of lost in the overall picture of this. It'd almost be like a 30-minute TV show that is, you know, 20 minutes of commercials, and then somewhere in there, there's some entertainment.
So congratulations, we find ourselves right back to what we hated about TV. Right. But now it's even worse, because now it's not, this is the time that I can run and go and get a sandwich, because this is the 35 seconds of commercials. Right. Now you're putting, the James Bond movies were the first ones that I remember, and this was many years ago, when they started talking about product placement. I never thought about it, but you would see James Bond pouring a martini, and it was a Smirnoff bottle, and his car was an Aston Martin, and there was always, and then you started paying attention. It's like, wow, look at that shot. That logo's right in the shot. Right, and then we started seeing people picking up phones, and then printed suspiciously on the bottom of the phone is AT&T.
Everybody has Beats headphones on now. Yeah.
So here's the thing. I think personally, and this is because I'm an old cranky man, I see virtually everything in the influencer kind of world that now. I find that people used to be so much more offended at brand deals back in 2015, 2016, because there weren't as many, and people didn't like that. What I wanted from this was not that. Now this is starting to infect that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, I get it. I understand you're trying to whatever. And I understand that you need to play the part. So could you do it like most people would like to do it? And like the way we've been trying to do it for the longest period of time, could you stop trying to put your product in my content and allow me to make my content and put a commercial for your product in there? Mm-hmm. Hey, everybody, if you didn't know, this video is sponsored by Squarespace.
Right.
Squarespace does this thing, da, da, da. And I'd like to thank them for supporting this video. Get into the video. But now everybody wants to mix up their content with the, I mean, of course, because the sponsors want that. But now we're just so worn down to it that we don't really realize that you're watching sponsored content when you're just watching the content of your favorite creators. And I think that kind of muddies the waters for the audience. I don't know when it's just you doing something or you're incorporating this thing into your video because you're getting paid for it. But we need separation of powers. And I've been doing this long enough, and I've worked with enough people to know that virtually all brands, or at least the agency people that represent these brands, want nothing more than to get exactly the words out of your mouth they want in the order that they want them, with the right amount of accent. And then the B-roll needs to focus on they're very specific, and they will tell you that they're very much interested in working with you. I assure you, they are looking to figure out how to get exactly the words, because they know the exact words and the exact order that you need to say them and when you need to say them. And that's why they're like, this needs to be, 8 seconds into the video and you need to say exactly this.
And I think it's just, I do think it's detrimental to your YouTube channel. If you're looking at YouTube growth over the long term, be very careful about how you accept these sponsorship deals, because I mean, I fell into that trap too. I was doing so many of those sponsorships, those 60-second shout out ads. But now whenever I'm watching a video and I you can sense them coming, and I'd like to thank this videos, and it's usually like right in the middle or something. And it basically it's like watching a video with obstacles. It's like, okay, I was watching the video. Now I've got to try to scrub through. Hopefully I'll get past the ad and come up where it gets back to the content. I may miss a few seconds of the actual content because I've tried to skip the whole damn ad. And so it just becomes like this exercise in frustration to watch a video because of those, because I really don't watch the ads. And I think that's the problem facing the advertisers, is how do you get people to watch those those shout out influencer ads when so many people are probably like me, just skipping through them.
And that's why they want it incorporated into your content in a place where you can't move forward in the content without moving forward with the advertiser message. And that's the rub. That's the thing that started turning me personally off of it. And I found myself in a place where I was turned off by it, but we needed to keep it going. We have people that need to be employed and da 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 da. So as much from a creative standpoint, I'm like, I want to move past this and we can't do this anymore. And we literally had one of our year-end strategy meetings as a team. And I think it was last year going into 2020. And we're like, this year, we're just going to focus on Makers Clean. The only thing we're going to talk about is just the stuff in our space. And we're going to, you know, no sponsorships in 2020. Well, you know, that doesn't happen. As much as I would like that to happen, and as much as I have my feelings about it. And the reason why I called it a big elephant in the room is the truth is brands come with tens of thousands of dollars still to this point. And until that stuff, and I know we're starting to get there, I assure you, mark my words, we are getting to the point where it's all like, there's none of those deals anymore, seemingly, for smaller YouTubers like we got in 2015.
Yeah, that was a crazy time back then. And I often felt when I was getting some of those sponsored deals, it was like, wow, I don't know if these advertisers really understand YouTube that well or something. They're just like throwing money out there. So it was kind of good to ride that at the time. But it's also the kind of thing that if you're a new channel and you really want to have a go at earning a living on YouTube, it may be your only option is to do those if you want to earn a living, because AdSense ain't gonna pay off until you get a lot of content on your channel. So, you know, I guess you got to do it. You got to do what you got to do if you want to earn a living. And unless you have some other source of income, I mean, you and I spend a lot of time creating products that we can sell. And I know that, you know, my course sales amount to the vast majority of my income is selling woodworking courses. And it's better for me to bite that sponsorship bullet and not do those anymore, which I haven't done in a couple of years, and use that spot, that time in my videos to promote my own products. And it serves a lot of different purposes. It helps the channel. I can promote them in a more seamless, organic way. Whenever I happen to be talking about something that's related to it, I can plug my own stuff. And people don't mind because it's my stuff. I'm the one who created it, and it's directly related to what I'm doing. I know that like one of my favorite channels is Jeff Cavalier, Athlete X. He does bodybuilding workout videos, but he plugs his website at the end of every single video. And he's like, I've got a step-by-step program that's going to build you up. There's a whole bunch of different, you know, options you can do on there, which one's right for you. He hits that home every single time. And it almost has become like his thing that you just kind of expect that. But you do that enough times and people are going to start to convert. I think one of the best things that anybody wanting to start a YouTube channel is also start a mailing list early. Start gathering up email addresses, you know, offer something. I have that, you know, $1,000 tool list, which is a great, I mean, it's called a lead magnet. It gets people over there. They get something in exchange for an email address. It's a free list showing you how you can, you know, buy all the tools you need to set up a shop for under $1,000. It's a great hook. It delivers.
I've got the actual commitment.
I've got the actual tools on there. And all you got to do is an email. And so with that email address, then we can send out our newsletter. I have a personal newsletter I send out once a month that people really like. And for people who came in through that direction, you know, they get into that whole sales funnel where they're, you know, learning about the products, and then they just learn more and more about them until the point where they want to decide whether they want to purchase it or not.
This episode of Chad and Steve Have a Podcast is brought to you by Steve's mailing list. Join Steve's mailing list at woodworkingfromyourimmortals.com.
That's right. I doubt, you know, I do that. I do my personal one once a month and people love that thing. Oh my God. The
I love open, is that notes from the shop?
Yeah. The open rate on that thing is like 35%. It's crazy.
I, I have very few. Okay, so we've had two people on this podcast who taught me everything I, well, inspired me to learn everything I needed to know about email lists. And that was Antonio and Tim Schmoyer.
Yeah.
Because both of them are like email list masters. And I remember seeing a video from, I think it was CPG Gray. And he did a video talking about his YouTube channel, just some issues with YouTube, And he goes on to talk about how important his email list has been. And as you were pointing out, to anybody who has any kind of platform anywhere, be it YouTube or Twitter or Instagram, like as soon as you build something which is on in someone else's sandbox, the one way that you can, you know, you can't reach those subscribers if YouTube shuts your channel down or if Twitter, you know, removes your account. However, having people's email addresses in a MailChimp kind of like a database, so therefore you can reach out and be like, hey, here's a new video. Hey, my YouTube channel got shut down. It ends up being this real kind of safety measure for you to be able to connect with people directly. And if you do it well, like you have, it ends up being this completely separate funnel. Funnel's not the right word because it makes everybody sound like a product, but it's a separate way for people to be able to interact with the content. And it's a whole form of content in itself. Do you write them yourself?
I do. Yeah.
You do, it's probably something you look forward to sitting down and being like, this is directly out to a bunch of people who really like reading this. So that in itself ends up making that be fun. It's like, it's a fun outlet for you to be able to connect with your audience.
Right. And then, so for that list, you know, that is just strictly highlighting other people who have made projects, and it's just, it's a nice kind of community building thing. And within there, I can also make a couple of mentions, by the way, if you are new to woodworking and would like to, you know, learn woodworking, here's a course I have. It's a real soft sell thing, and it's not intrusive, and it's not, you know, hit you over the head with a sales pitch or anything, which is different from the, not that we hit people over the head with sales pitch, but it's different than when people like get my lead magnet, which is be the tool list. And then they get into a series of emails that comes just talking about the courses and telling them what you can expect. And it's, again, it's not like buy, you know, you have to buy this stuff. It's much more sophisticated than that. And I'm proud of it, actually, because I love that way of selling is so much better than trying to sell somebody else's products. And I think a lot of selling and marketing came down to confidence in being able to pitch your product in a way that your audience appreciates. And it's a two-way street there. It's something that most of the people will enjoy. It's a good product. And you should be proud about selling products like that. There's nothing wrong with pitching your own stuff. And for a lot of people, that's just kind of a hard hurdle to get over. And I was the same way. I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, you know, my first thought is like, yeah, I got this thing. If you want to buy it, go ahead. You don't have to buy it. When it's much better just to be upfront and say that I've got a kick-ass product I think you guys would be interested in. Go check it out.
I've spent years working on it. Yeah. I know the ins and outs of it. I know it from a development stage. I've seen all the samples. I've invested in it. So of course, if you would like to support me, here's a great way to directly do it. And almost all of the money literally does benefit me, and it'll benefit me moving forward. Well, past this one video with a mention of a particular product, which I got X amount of dollars for, this is now something that I can build up outside of this. And this is, I think, ultimately what we wanted to get to, which is making money off of YouTube by using the platform to build an audience, but you don't build an audience by doing endless amounts of sponsored content. The catch 22 with YouTube is, in order to get big in the first place, you can't be commercial. You actually have to put out good content, which has no calls to action. No, like, I'd be like Jerry Seinfeld taking his show, and at the end of every single one of his episodes, him being like, hey, don't forget to tune in next week when we're going to do another one of these shows. And he allows the piece of content to be the piece of content and not sprinkling. And I just find it, I'm being nostalgic and I'm thinking back to starting out, and that was not the reason for starting out, but that was the mindset which got me into a place which allowed that to be a reality, if that makes sense. Yeah. All of those people coming out of the gate with sponsored videos and this, that, and the other, you're not giving any space to like what you're actually trying to say outside of the advertising or outside of the brand deal, as
right,
it were.
Right. I actually like marketing myself. It feels good. It feels
it's
good.
Authentic, isn't it?
It is. It feels way better than trying to sell somebody else's products. And to finish up my percentages of income for anybody's interested, I thought it'd be fun to, I just have a few broad categories that I keep on, in my bookkeeping software. And so like total commissions, I call it commissions, and that is affiliate sales, merchandise, all of that kind of stuff. It amounts to about 5% of my income. So it's not bad, but it is what it is. AdSense, you're looking at about 11% of my income. And then I have things like Facebook video. 0.3% of my income comes from Facebook video.
We have 125 videos on Facebook over here at Claim My Space. And I'm like willing to break the terms of service over at Facebook. And I'm willing to tell you that 3 days ago, we received our statement for the direct deposit into our account. All right. Is everyone ready?
Drum roll, in. Please.
$1.27.
Oh, you're not working it. Yeah, I got it.
We're not working it.
I made a couple hundred bucks off of that.
Well, I made a dollar, Steve.
So 0% of my income is from sponsored brand deals now. And that was a hard one to swallow. It took a while because it was a conscious decision. It was like, I am going to lose a big portion of my income.
It's something that we've heard from many creators through Clamor, mm-hmm. talking to and getting a chance to speak with a lot of other creators. There's a lot of other people who are in that exact same space. It's almost like this necessary evil. And that's why we keep referring to it as the elephant in the room. It's like, it needs to be there. It kind of does. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe there's a way to whatever, but it's certainly a lot easier when you figure out how to incorporate brand deals. So allow me to digress on my whole, like, it's all about creativity and whatever. It's also about like making money. So therefore you can actually do it. So I just don't know how effective it is anymore. And I also don't know how much longer brands are willing to put a bunch of money when it's so, you literally just talked about scrubbing through ads. Yeah. And you know what? One of the interesting things that we discovered during this podcast, or at least I discovered during this podcast, was how many people watch YouTube videos at different speeds, the change the playback speed and speed it up. May I say, since I discovered that through a bunch of people who listened to this and was like, I'm listening to you right now, guys, at 2x speed or whatever speed you're listening. I do that now. And I love it. It's a fantastic way to consume content. So great. However, now with the new being able to hover over the scrub bar, as it were, and be able to visually see. So therefore, as you say, when someone's like this, now let's talk about our, it's so easy just to scrub past that. So the blindness is there. No one's really paying attention. So how much longer are brands going to continue to kind of like spend money in this space?
Yeah. And I think if we could kind of bring it back home to where we were starting, the question is can you, if you're a brand new, want to, you know, give it a shot, try out YouTube, you think you've got a good idea, you want to make a YouTube channel, is it really a viable option that you're going to earn a living off of YouTube? Is that really possible? I think the answer, if I could just answer my own question, is yes, it's possible, but I think you need to give it a lot of thought about where your income is going to come from. And that if you think that you're going to, you know, hit a lot of AdSense revenue and quit your day job and buy a new home, it's not likely that's going to happen unless you're just one of those one in probably several million people who manages to hit that sweet spot and figures out the algorithm game and, you know, gets that 1 million views per video kind of thing. You know, those are rare. I think it's a difference between a lot of the old media when they talk about, oh, these rich YouTube you know, creators, is it's kind of the difference between traditional celebrities making lots of money and like community theater. You know, it's like, okay, you're still doing the same job, but you're not going to be making as much, and you have to approach it for the right reasons.
Community theater is a great example because no one's doing community theater. I mean, maybe you are, but ultimately you're doing it in a community theater because of hopefully love of what you're doing. And perhaps that's the first question that you should be asking yourself is, are you starting a YouTube channel to make content and have fun? Or are you starting a YouTube channel to make money? Because I assure you, you'll be able to start a YouTube channel and make fun content and quite possibly make good money off of it. But I bet you if you were to reverse those and try to start a channel and try to make money off of it, I'd be willing to put my money on the person who's doing it the other way. Versus you coming out of the gate and trying to be like, all right, if I make this kind of content, I'm going to start attracting these kind of advertisers and these kinds of brand deals. And this is the way that I don't understand how you can start deciding how you're going to make money off of an audience, which isn't there yet.
But that's the hard thing, is where do you even find that audience? I mean, we were joking around with those figures about our Chad and Steve YouTube channel. Well, that's just because we had existing audiences that we could bring over, you know, a portion of those.
It took us uploading hour-long videos, 15 of them, and got one from a person who managed to get 13,000 views on it through just, you know, them being them. That managed to get us 4,000 hours on a new channel. And right, that was with all of these other things that we could call upon, yeah, let alone if we had nothing to begin with and launched an hour-long video and it got one view.
If you're going to start from scratch, you're going to have to do a lot of work. And I mean, you're going to have to devote yourself to that channel. And that means, you know, things like commenting on other videos, getting mm-hmm. your name out there, going to websites, wherever it is, whatever your niche is that you're working on, just get out there and start working it on social media. You're going to have to do Instagram. You're going to have to do Facebook. You're going to have to do all of this stuff to build a YouTube channel, especially if you're just a solo creator with a camera. I mean, now so many, you know, content creators and channels are coming in with full teams working on these things.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, you really do. You have entire businesses which are being started up. And, you know, in the business model or in the business plan, they have, here's the rollout for our social, and here's the rollout for our YouTube yeah. kind of presence. And here's the videos we're going to do, and here's how we're going to do them. And here's all of the fantastic equipment. So yeah, the bar is really high. Perhaps there's someone listening who's like, oh no, but yeah. no. If you're listening and you're like, I have an idea and I want to do this and I want to do it, then yes, because that's exactly how you build an audience. We wouldn't have had a deal in 2014 if in 2010 we didn't for 4 years release videos every single week about cleaning our toilets. Yep. Yeah. So, you know, but we did it because, you know, we just thought it was cool and we were having a lot of fun doing it. So we were way too busy to think about like, oh, could we make money off of this? And then by the time the audience was there, because they got attracted to us having fun in our content and being like, hey, these guys are doing some whatever. Then by the time we were, you know, in a position where we could decide whether we wanted to get into doing brand deals or advertising or whatnot, we already had the luxury of like factoring in what the audience wanted. And that's mm-hmm. also what we do to this very day. When we deal with a brand, we literally refer to the audience as a person who is sitting at that table with us. There's us, there's the brand, there's the agency people, and then there's the audience. And we constantly bring them in and constantly use them as a, this isn't going to work, because they're not going to like this.
And another thing I just want to throw out there before we wrap this up is, if you want to succeed on YouTube as a creator, you also have to be a YouTube user. You really need to be, you got to kind of love YouTube and watch a lot of YouTube and be a part of the entire platform, really. Just, it's not enough to just be, I'm going to post a video and then turn on my computer and go on and make another video, post it, and then that's it.
You have to like consuming content and understand what you like in order to turn that around and have that kind of come out of you almost.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things I love about bringing whoever we managed to get on this podcast and asking them who they like. Who do you watch on YouTube? What got you into YouTube is one of the most fascinating questions. For be like, what was the first thing that's like, oh, I had a flat tire and that's how I learned, you know, that was the first video that I watched on YouTube. And then I got hooked into this. Or we all have our different little rabbit holes that we go down on YouTube. But it's a very good point, Steve. That's part of it. You need to understand the community that you're trying to be a part of. Otherwise, you look like a big imposter. You're the person in the room being like, hey, guys, I got a bunch of brand deals over here. Come watch my video.
Yeah. Ask any best-selling author. And people ask them, how do you become an author? And they say, well, you read a lot. You constantly read if you want to write.